I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and if any of the issues that you hear on today's episode sound like something you'd like to discuss with me, at the end of the show, I'll let you know how you can connect with me. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jillian Lynch. Jillian is the VP and Managing Director of Winsper. Jillian heads up account management for the firm's many diverse clients, from plasma cutters to strollers, sewing machines to software. Jillian gets jazzed to work with smart, curious people who want to advance and differentiate their business. She's the company's resident foodie and dog enthusiast, and probably the only person we've met who vehemently believes that yoga pants should never go out of style. Jillian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
So you and I met at the C-Suite conference in New York in September. And before we kind of get into the meat of what we're planning to discuss today, let's start with corduroy, because I love what you what you have in your bio about your dog. So what's the story?
Corduroy is the love of my life. Don't tell my husband. Corduroy is a 140-pound Great Pyrenees.
Oh, my God.
He's a big boy. who my husband and I rescued about 5 years ago. And he is just, he's been amazing. He's a fabulous dog. And as you can imagine, he's very spoiled. So it's funny you should mention it. I've spent a little bit of today trying to figure out what he's going to be for Halloween this upcoming Monday.
And what does it seem like is the leading contender?
The leading contender, you know, I think he's probably going to be a wizard. He has a very long white beard, and I think a wizard might be the ticket this year to win the red dog best dressed pooch.
Sounds great. So I hope you post some pictures on social media.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So we'll we'll watch for that.
Excellent.
So let's get into something a little more serious. And sure. I wondered if we could talk a little bit about what happens when an executive has been at a company for a long time, maybe perhaps decades. I know it's something that we talked a little bit about when we met at the conference.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And I wondered if we could start there and you could talk a little bit about what you've observed and what your thoughts are.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, for a lot of executives that have been in an industry or have been with a particular company for a long period of time, for most people, there comes a period when they find themselves stranded on this plateau. And what I think happens is, you know, if you're the leader of the company, what you're probably seeing is R&D is starting to dry up. Innovation and innovative thinking is MIA. Your revenue is going to start to flatline if it hasn't already. And you're probably seeing that employees are becoming complacent and a little bit detached. And you know, what you need is some fresh thinking, some innovation. But that's hard to do if you've been in one particular industry or one particular role for an extended period of time. We see this at Winsper quite frequently. We're often brought in to help manufacturers that are at this plateau, but that are looking to take their business to the next level and either overcome a pretty prominent obstacle that has everybody at the organization stumped, or get to that next level as far as revenue where you can really differentiate yourself in the marketplace. So I think it's quite common that executives get to that point.
Hmm. So what can you do to try to create some innovative thinking?
I'll tell you what you shouldn't do, David. I think one of the biggest mistakes that executives make when they find themselves stranded on this plateau is to think that the answer for righting the ship is going to come from a colleague or an industry peer. I think that there's this prevalent notion that a lot of C-suite executives have, that their business is so unique and so different that an outsider couldn't possibly understand it, let alone have the answer for how their business can grow to meet their next revenue target or to overcome the obstacles that they're currently facing. We've seen it time and time again. I just can't tell you how many marketing and salespeople in particular we've encountered who would never even hire an employee for their company, let alone an outside contractor who didn't have industry experience. And frankly, David, I think that's a huge mistake. I think that's why people are stuck on this plateau for a lot longer than they need to be. There have been a number of studies conducted by different organizations that have proven that when you work with people outside of your industry and outside of your wheelhouse, that's when you're going to be able to get some novel solutions and some innovative ideas that have eluded you for some time.
You know, when I'm listening to you say this, Jillian, it makes total sense to me. Yet I can also see, and I've experienced time and time again, how leaders in business are very reluctant to bring somebody on who doesn't have industry experience, whether it's
right.
an employee, a consultant, a coach, all the above. And if you want to have diverse viewpoints,
right,
what better than to get somebody who isn't tainted by the usual thinking that goes on in your sector?
Exactly. I think we spoke a little bit about this at the C-suite conference, but one of our biggest clients in the past 5 years was a sewing machine manufacturer by the name of Janome. They were a $70 million manufacturer of sewing machines for domestic use. And for decades, they had worked with a marketing firm that specialized in sewing. The owner of this firm was herself a sewist. The portfolio of clients that they had worked with were all sewing machine brands. And as a result, all of their sales and marketing materials looked almost identical to those of their competitors. It just really all looked, sounded, and felt the same. And, they could not for the life of them figure out why they weren't able to differentiate themselves from the competition in the minds of their consumers. So the leadership there was just, for years and years trying to figure out how do we stand out in this really, really saturated marketplace when we have 7 or 8 other very formidable competitors who all also manufacture a great product and also sell through the same network of dealers and market in the same publications and on the same channels. So they actually had a change in leadership a couple years ago, and we got a call at Winsper. And we were told that Janome, the sewing machine manufacturer, was interested in working with us, which I'll admit we were a little taken aback by. And we were then told that they were interested in working with us because they recently had a change in leadership. And the new COO was a big fan of another client of ours by the name of Steel. So for those of you who don't know, Steel is, they're a manufacturer of handheld outdoor power equipment. They're a German brand, but the lion's share of the manufacturing actually occurs nationally here in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And they manufacture the most badass chainsaws on the market. So we're contacted by a sewing machine manufacturer and eventually hired because of our relationship with a chainsaw manufacturer, which we found kind of odd, right? But what we soon came to realize was that the new leadership at Janome, perhaps before us, had noticed that there are a ton of similarities between Steel's business and their own. Both manufacturers sell their premium products only through independent dealers as opposed to big box stores. Both brands had very passionate and very vocal customers who had no problem spending hundreds of dollars more for their brand of preference. And both sets of customers viewed the product as a means to express themselves. So whether it's chopping wood or sculpting cool, wooden sculptures, for lack of a better term, or putting together a quilt, the customers felt that these brands helped them to express themselves. So Janome essentially realized we've been on this plateau for years. We've been going to the same people in the same industry for fresh thinking, and shocker, we're not getting it. Let's look to other industries with similar situations and see if we can leverage the understanding of contractors that have worked with them to help kind of leapfrog our competition.
So if you're the CEO of a stagnant company, like let's take your sewing machine company as an example. If you're the CEO and you know that you need some fresh thinking from somebody who has faced similar kinds of problems but in a different industry. Is there a certain framework or certain kinds of questions you should ask yourself so you can figure out who is the whisper that I need to go find?
Certainly. So, you know, we recommend that our clients always stay abreast of any changes at brands that they love and they admire. So even though you might be the CEO of a sewing machine company, actually, the past president of Janome was a huge motorcycle guy and absolutely loved Harley Davidson. And because of that passion for them, he was constantly following what they were doing from a marketing perspective to continue to sell into baby boomers, but also to start to attract millennials who were new up and coming customers for Harley. They also are up and coming customers for Janome on the sewing machine front. So, you know, start with brands that you admire and brands that you respect and ideally ones that you yourself purchase from. But then if you want to get a little bit more specific, as I'd mentioned, you know, the relevance between Steel and Janome really was based on this selective distribution strategy, which is something that we in Winsper are pursuing. And we've been amazed to see how many manufacturers in a variety of industries, from dog food to outdoor power equipment to sewing machines to power sports, how many manufacturers are making this decision to only sell through independent retailers in a time when a lot of their competitors and a lot of the brands that we as Americans purchase each day are being sold through mass merchandisers and big box stores. So if you are a premium manufacturer who's made this decision, that's a kind of an easy one, is to take a look at other manufacturers and industries that have also made this, again, selective distribution decision.
Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at some of the basic elements of business where other kinds of companies have similar elements, such as your business strategy, your revenue model, your distribution system, your kinds of customers,
sales models, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You know, while the product you manufacture may be completely different, the principles of business are very much the same from organization to organization. So looking at other companies that you admire or other companies who have similarities organizationally as you is a good starting point.
That's great. So with that in mind, I wondered if we could actually shift and talk about what you might have personally experienced with yourself and your own role. Are there some things that you do personally to help you smash the plateau?
Absolutely. So, you know, I think what I've done over the years to help smash my own plateau is to really just roll up my sleeves and try to learn something about everything. So in the two agencies that I've worked at to date, I've found that I've had great success, and I've been able to move up quickly by understanding not just my own job, but what it is that the people around me do each day and what are some of the obstacles that they face. I found that having a really good holistic, generalist type understanding of the various people that I work with and work for has helped me to just have a better appreciation for the process as a whole and has helped me to scale my own growth tremendously.
That's great. I know one of the things also that we talked about when we met at the conference was some of the issues around having a millennial workforce.
Yes, yes. So I myself am a millennial, David. And I have to say, when I started at Winsper in particular, I was, I believe, one of, if not the youngest by decades. Fast forward 7 years later, and I'm the second oldest person at the agency. So it's been a little bit interesting. But, you know, my team right now is comprised of millennials entirely. And there are a lot of differences from a traditional workforce that is populated with Gen Xers and baby boomers. And I think that you have to be open to that and you have to embrace that if you want to get the most out of millennial employees.
And what have you observed about how different generations may approach a plateau and how they try to deal with trying to smash the plateau?
Absolutely. So, you know, I think just work habit-wise, you know, millennials are very different than Gen Xers and boomers. And there have been countless studies done on this, but millennials want to feel comfortable, they want to feel appreciated, and they want flexibility. So something that we've had to do here at Winsper that's been really important is honestly, the largest thing has been flexibility with work from home. I've noticed that with certain employees, I'm able to get a lot more work out of them if they are able to phone in from the comfort of their home or work on a presentation from home. There are less distractions and there's a certain comfort level there that enables them to be more productive. So that's been a big game changer here and something that we've had to get used to, but something that's working out really well.
So flexibility and listening to the needs of your employees.
Absolutely. I think that, as I just expressed, millennials like to be generalists. And I have everybody here at Winspur has a major and a minor. The major is the job that they were hired for. The minor is something that they're also interested in and that kind of gets them jazzed. So they take it upon themselves to either in free time or downtime, learn something about another skill set that they can bring to the table. My background is account management, which is a pretty traditional agency competency. My minor is market research. For whatever reason, since college, I've just always been really interested to learn more about market research techniques and how it is that we can get to the heart of what consumers are thinking and feeling when they interact with brands. So that's something that I, in my, again, personal free time or downtime, try to learn more about so that I can bring that to our small team and we can offer that as a core competency of the agency.
What are some of the unexpected benefits that your company has received by encouraging employees to spend some time focusing on their minors?
You know, the unexpected but huge benefit is really saving money. We have been able to keep a lot of work in-house that we would have typically farmed out. And as a result, we've been able to have much more profitable projects because we have more skill sets in-house than we had initially planned for. So it's sort of a two for one, if you will. I have an art director who is also really into programming. So whenever it is that we need something done on the website or an email put together, he can also do that. I don't have to farm it out. We have an account person who is into video editing. So that's yet another thing that we've been able to keep in-house. So everyone here is very, very much encouraged to pursue a minor, so long as it does not distract them from, you know, their core competency, which is what we hire them to do and what they do for their clients primarily at a full-time basis.
Jillian, going back to something that I mentioned when I introduced you at the beginning of the show, I talked about the diverse kinds of clients that you have at Winspur.
Yes.
From plasma cutters to strollers.
Yes.
What kinds of challenges do you think it creates to have clients that are so diverse?
There's a learning curve associated with each new account that we take on that's in a new industry. And I think, you know, those examples are actually real. We worked for several years on a high-end European baby stroller company. And not too long after that, my next big account was a New Hampshire-based manufacturer of plasma cutting systems. And I had to very quickly switch gears from targeting affluent females who were expecting or with children to, targeting burly men working in in everything from factories to shipyards that are building things with heavy steel. It's a challenge, but it's one I like to quickly shift gears and to quickly bone up on an industry and a business. And it's something that, frankly, not everyone can do. So when we hire, we look for people that are intellectually versatile and are curious as well. If you're not curious, then you're not going to get as much of a rush out of switching gears so quickly as other people would. So it's something that plays a very important role in our hiring process.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about the hiring process, actually, because this is something that many companies struggle with, is finding the right kind of talent and getting the talent up to speed. Talk to me a little bit about the kinds of traits you look for in people and how you determine what the important traits are for your company.
Absolutely. We are a small organization, as I mentioned. So I look for people that are agile. I look for people that I think could function in a startup environment without a ton of handholding, frankly. I like people that are self-starters. So we try to, as best we can, identify people that are passionate and that tend to have hobbies or extracurriculars outside of their work experience. That's a nice way of understanding whether people are, again, intellectually curious and like to wear multiple hats. This is going to sound kind of cheesy, but everybody here is a smartass, so you have to have a good sense of humor in order to fit in, and you know, in order to partake in the culture, if you will. But you know, really just look for intelligent people. We don't care too much about backgrounds as far as college education or college major goes. I just look for people that are eager to learn, that have a pretty solid understanding of marketing to begin with, and that have, I would just say, a charismatic personality that makes my team want to work with them as well as client teams.
Mm. And when you look at other companies and maybe some of your clients, what kinds of mistakes do you see them making when it comes to talent acquisition and development?
You know, I think that in particular in advertising, there's this really wonky line that I see on so many job recs that says, you know, the title of the job is entry level, but then one of the requirements is 2 to 3 years experience, which drives me nuts. And I've heard from so many people is just quite the conundrum, right? How can you be entry level but already have 2 to 3 years of agency experience under your belt? We're talking well above and beyond just a basic internship. So, you know, I think that, you know, again, as I mentioned, agency experience is not necessarily a must. I'm just looking for smart people that are motivated, that have an entrepreneurial spirit, and again, that are intellectually curious. And you can teach them the rest of, you know, the administrative type tasks and the software and the housekeeping type stuff. I think just inherently we're looking for bright, curious people.
Yeah.
And that's something that's often overlooked. It's, you know, recruiters are looking to tick boxes of, you know, software and years of experience and, you know, certain names of colleges on the resume. And I don't necessarily think that's applicable to get a really great all-star team.
Yeah. Also, if we're talking about trying to create an atmosphere where there's some innovation, like we were talking about earlier, then having people with diverse backgrounds can really help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think having, you know, right now I have people from literally all over the world, as well as various industries. And it makes for a very interesting mix of people. It makes for very, very productive brainstorms. And I think it just it creates a very, very nice multidisciplinary culture that we're really proud of here at Winsper.
Sounds great. So, Jillian, I wondered if we could shift for a little bit and talk about somebody else.
Okay.
And I wonder if there's someone you know personally that you think has done a really great job of smashing the plateau.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'd have to say my boss and the founder of Winsper, Jeff. Jeff Winsper is quite the self-made man. He started his first agency back in the early 90s, grew it to a pretty sizable firm, and then sold it to Leo Burnett. He took some time off and then decided that he wasn't done yet and he wanted to come back and start another agency. So Winsper is actually his second foray in the agency world. The other thing that I've seen Jeff do that's been really remarkable is he started a software company essentially out of our office in the past 5 years. Jeff identified a major gap that was going on at the CMO level, where marketing was really just a department that got a budget every year to spend, but there was no accountability. There was no there were no measures in place for marketing to prove that there was a return on the investment that they were being given each year. So Jeff started a software called Ion, which is really picking up right now. And that software is now being we're trying to sell it into some pretty major manufacturers. Steel is a user of the software. And they're leveraging it to uncover incredible insights about their sales and marketing activities that they've never been able to visualize before.
Mm. What are some of the metrics that the software tracks?
Oh man, the metrics can the software can track a number of different things, but what is kind of turning out to be the sweet spot is identifying opportunity zones for expanding your footprint. So I'll use the example of Steel. Steel uses the software to visualize where and when their products are being sold around the country and through what Steel dealers. What's interesting and something that we're working on right now is overlaying that information and the historical purchase data with weather patterns. So something that's kind of cool is when we go into the software and we take a look at purchases and we take a look at time periods, our data scientists have also overlaid that with data from the National Weather Service. So we're able to see sales that are occurring after a major tornado or hurricane has swept through an area. And one of the things that we've noticed is that in some areas after a tornado or a hurricane touches down, there are no product sales afterwards. And what that means essentially is that in that region, there's no steel dealer. So what we've been able to do and what we're working on with them is helping to identify additional areas for where they can open up more brick and mortar stores or more dealers to capture sales.
Wow, that's a fascinating insight and one that I think you're right. Without the data, who would have known?
Right, right.
That's great. Jillian, what are you currently working on at Winspur, and what do we have to look forward to in the near future?
Absolutely. So we at Winspur were just hired by a new industrial client. The press release is going to be out later this week, so I don't want to spill the beans too much. But this manufacturer is launching a brand new product in 2017 that is honestly less than half of the traditional products that they've sold. It's going to open them up to a whole cornucopia of new industries and applications. They're changing their distribution strategy, which is no small undertaking. And I think the net is that this is just going to be a major game changer to them. So we're very excited to help this company and the new leadership make a name for themselves. And my team is jazzed because there's an opportunity to do really fabulous work for them. So we're honored to have been brought in to run this launch, and it's going to have us very busy for the next several months.
Sounds great. Well, sounds very exciting. Now, Jillian, thanks. How can listeners learn more about you and what you are up to at Winspur?
Absolutely. So I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @gal617. And I'm trying to be more diligent about posting our news and posting things that interest me on there. You can also check us out on our corporate website, which is www.winspur.com. That's WINSPER.
Sounds great. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more exciting news from you and what you're up to. I'm also looking forward to seeing those photos of Corduroy on Halloween.
The wizard.
And it's been great having you on today on Smashing the Plateau.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, it's been great talking about really how to think in an innovative way and really use diversity and use a diverse set of ideas to help you get past a place where you might be a little stuck.
Yes.
So thanks again for coming on. My guest today has been Jillian Lynch, VP and Managing Director of Winspur. Thanks again, Jillian, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.